and you're listening to WBAI.
From Pacifica Radio, this is Democracy Now! The Senate votes to allow discrimination against gay men and lesbians, dealing them a double defeat. Can gay and lesbian rights be equated with civil rights? We'll have a debate. Ross Perot chooses his running mate.
Dr. Pat Choate is the person I have selected to be my running mate. He is a friend and trusted advisor of many years. Dr. Choate will play a central role in the campaign of ideas, solutions, and an equally central role in implementing them when we win.
We'll look at the talk show host and economist and what he means for the Reform Party ticket. All that and more coming up on Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! Welcome to Democracy Now!, Public Broadcasting's only daily election show. I'm Amy Goodman. Ross Perot has chosen Pat Choate, a 55-year-old author known for attacks on foreign lobbyists and the North American Free Trade Agreement. He's chosen him as his Reform Party's vice presidential candidate. Meanwhile, President Clinton and Bob Dole debate negotiators meet today, but the nonpartisan commission on the debates won't decide until next week whether Perot or Ralph Nader or other third-party candidates will be invited. Bill Clinton has opened a three-day cross-country campaign swing designed to solidify his lead in key states. Clinton criticized GOP rival Bob Dole for voting against the family leave law and aired a TV ad portraying Dole's opposition as cold-hearted. Bob Dole released new television ads reflecting the GOP ticket's dual emphasis. A two-minute spot showcases Dole as a man of integrity and strong work ethic, including footage from Colin Powell's speech at the Republican National Convention. A new 30-second spot pushes Dole's economic plan. Vice President Al Gore says the administration would bring jobs and businesses back into inner-city communities. Speaking to a crowd in Philadelphia, Gore said the administration will bring back hope block by block, house by house, to the area. And Republican vice presidential nominee Jack Kemp called on Nation of Islam leader Louis Farrakhan to renounce anti-Semitism. Speaking to a coalition of Jewish American organizations, Kemp said his own lifelong commitment to racial and ethnic reconciliation had been sorely misrepresented in news stories published Sunday and Tuesday. They said he had praised Louis Farrakhan as a man who encouraged people to be self-empowered. And this international news, Boris Yeltsin has been transferring authority over national security matters to Prime Minister Chernyshyn for an undetermined period while the Russian president prepares for open-heart surgery, but he retained nuclear launch powers. Top Russian heart specialists are to meet soon to set a date for the surgery. And the U.S. and Iraq is defying U.S. warnings not to rebuild air defense sites, at least according to Washington. U.S. officials said President Clinton will probably retaliate, but manned bombers may be used this time, requiring more preparation. Repair of the sites would pose a threat to Allied jets patrolling the no-fly zone, says Washington. In the north, Iraq Allied Kurdish forces solidified their hold on a rival faction's stronghold, and Baghdad offered amnesty to 300,000 refugees who had fled toward Iran. You're listening to Democracy Now! It's been a historic week for gay and lesbian rights in this country. Yesterday, the U.S. Senate told U.S. employers that it's okay to discriminate against lesbian and gay Americans. The Senate narrowly defeated the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, or ENDA, a bill that would have banned discrimination against gays and lesbians in hiring and promotions. The bill lost on a 50-49 vote. On the same day, the Senate debated and overwhelmingly passed the so-called Defense of Marriage Act, declaring that the federal government recognizes marriages only between a man and a woman, and states may refuse to accept same-sex marriages performed in other states. The vote on the Defense of Marriage Act was 85-14. One of the senators urging his colleagues to support the bill was Texas Republican Phil Graham.
Now, let me talk very briefly about the economic ramifications of this, and let me say, as a person who used to practice economics, the so-called dismal science, as compared to the power of the family as the foundation of our civilization and our culture, dollars and cents in this context are not terribly important. But as a secondary issue, they are. And let me explain why. A failure to pass this bill, if the Hawaii court rules in favor of same-sex marriages, will mean that that will trigger, through the full faith and credit provision of the Constitution, if we don't take this action, it will trigger in same-sex marriages a whole group of new beneficiaries. No one knows what the number would be, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, potentially more, who will be beneficiaries of newly defined survivor benefits under Social Security, federal retirement, under military retirement. It will trigger a whole group of new benefits under federal health plans. And not only will it trigger these benefits in the federal government, but under the full faith and credit provision of the Constitution, it will impose in teacher retirement, in state retirement, in state medical expenses, in railroad retirement, it will impose a whole new set of benefits that are not contemplated under current law and current practice, which will come into existence. So here are the issues in very simple fashion. Number one, is there anything unique about the traditional family? Well, for every moment of recorded history, we have said yes. In every major religion in history, from the early Greek myths of the Iliad and the Odyssey to the oldest writings of the Bible to the oldest teachings of civilization, governments have recognized the family as the foundation for prosperity and happiness, and in democratic societies, the foundation of freedom. And we have given the marriage special sanction. Not that there can't be contracts among individuals, but there is something unique about the family in terms of what it does for our society and the foundation function it provides that every civilized society in 5,000 years of recorded history has recognized. Are we so wise today that we are ready to reject 5,000 years of recorded history? I don't think so. I think even the greatest society in the history of the world, which we are, the United States of America, even the greatest society in the history of the world trifles with the traditional family at great peril to itself. I intend today to vote for the Defense of Marriage Act because I want to defend, to protect, and to perpetuate this traditional recognition of the traditional family as the foundation for society. I believe the federal government clearly is given a role, and no one would dispute that we're given a role under Article 4, Section 1 of the Constitution to prescribe the manner in which such acts, records, and proceedings shall be proved and the effect thereon. To fail to exercise our constitutional responsibility would mean that states which do not choose to give recognition to same-sex marriages would be forced to, if in this case Hawaii grants that recognition. To say that we should stay out of this issue is to simply endorse same-sex marriages. I believe that we have an obligation to act. I believe this is a very clear defining issue. I think it is one of those issues where it ought to be very clear to anybody as to where they stand. I stand with the traditional family. I do not believe 5,000 years of recorded history have been an error. I believe the traditional family, a union of a man and a woman on which our entire civilization is based. I believe it is unique. I believe it is the foundation of our prosperity, our freedom, our happiness, and I want to defend it And I am confident we will do that this very day. And I yield the floor.
And that was Republican Senator Phil Gramm of Texas, one of the few members of the Senate speaking out against the bigotry, the federal encroachment, and the election year politics of this bill, was California Democrat Barbara Boxer.
On the Defense of Marriage Act, I want to point out once again that this act, in my opinion, has nothing to do with defending marriage. As someone who has been married for many years to the same person, I can truly say that if we want to defend marriage, we should be discussing ways that truly help lift the strains and stresses on marriage. And we all know what those are. We all know the financial strains and stresses on marriage. As a matter of fact, when I heard that we were going to be discussing a bill called the Defense of Marriage Act, I was looking forward to seeing what it was, because I honestly thought, because it's called the Defense of Marriage Act, that it would be doing something to help us defend marriage in this country. One in two marriages does end in divorce in this country, and in many cases they are tragic endings. Tragic for the partners, tragic for the children, tragic for the extended families. And there are things that we could do, such things as paycheck security, Mr. President, such things as pension security, such things that the senator from Connecticut brought to us in terms of the Parental Leave Act, which the president so supports. We ought to be looking at ways to give that additional 24 hours to working families so they could spend more time if their child needs them at a school appointment or some special doctor's appointment. These are the kinds of things we ought to be looking at. These are the kinds of things that would defend marriage, defend families. I don't think this Defense of Marriage Act is about any of that. I do think, however, it is about something else. I believe it's about hurting a whole group of people for absolutely no reason whatsoever. Not one group in this country that fights for fairness for gays and lesbians has asked us to legalize gay marriage here in the United States Senate. Not one member of the House or Senate is proposing a bill that would legalize gay marriage or give benefits to domestic partners. Not one state in the Union has recognized gay marriage at all. As a matter of fact, many have absolutely said no to gay marriage. So here we have a situation where we're launching a preemptive strike on a proposal that doesn't exist. Yes, there is a court that is looking at the subject in Hawaii, but that decision is many years away, according to legal scholars. And I would ask unanimous consent to place into the record pages 44 and 45 of the hearing on the judiciary, where you have legal scholars telling us, in fact, that states will not have to recognize other states' gay marriages if they so choose. I would ask to put that in the
without objections ordered.
So one has to ask oneself, why are we doing this? I think the Washington Post today had an excellent editorial in which they say, why is the Senate taking up this matter now? And they also point out how this issue is years away, years away. Well, I think we know why it's happening. It's election year politics. And as one of the two senators from California, I'm not going to be part of that kind of politics. As I said before, it's a preemptive strike on a non-existent proposal. It's as if we decided as a nation to bomb a country because we thought they were going to do something to harm us, when in fact all they wanted to do is live in peace. Of course America would never do such a thing. And why would we want to do it to a whole group of people? I believe we're all Americans, Mr. President. I believe we do much better when we work together on issues, when we don't divide. If you read history books, you'll see so many cases in history where a group of people is identified and they are scapegoated, and they are treated differently, and they become nameless, and they become faceless. It's what I call the politics of division, the politics of fear. And I could never be associated with that kind of politics.
And that was Senator Barbara Boxer, Democrat of California. The side note, her daughter, Nicole, is married to Hillary Rodham Clinton's brother. You're listening to Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. Joining me is my co-host, Juan Gonzalez, columnist for the New York Daily News. And joining us to talk about these latest developments and challenges to the gay and lesbian movement is Keith Boykin, the executive director of the National Black, Gay, and Lesbian Leadership Forum based in Washington, D.C. Boykin is a former special assistant to President Clinton who worked in the White House on the administration's outreach to gay and lesbian and African-American communities. And he's the author of a new book called One More River to Cross, Black and Gay in America. We welcome you to Democracy Now!, Keith.
Thank you.
Yes, Keith, this is Juan Gonzalez. I'd like to begin the discussion and ask you what degree, how big of a setback are these two votes for the gay and lesbian movement in the country and for progressive politics in the country?
Well, I think the vote on the Employment Non-Discrimination Act is not a setback at all. I think it shows that we have tremendous momentum, that there are more and more people who are starting to support the idea of equal rights for gays and lesbians in the United States Senate. And that is starting to become a closer reflection of the general views of the population at large. Most Americans overwhelmingly support the rights of gays and lesbians in employment. As far as the Defense of Marriage Act, that is something of a setback. But at the same time, I think that was a little harder issue for us to win. And I think we went into it knowing that it was going to be a tough challenge.
Were you surprised that you lost the Defense of Marriage Act to such liberal senators as Barbara Mikulski of Maryland? She voted against gay marriage.
Well, that was a little surprising. There were a few votes that struck me as being a little peculiar. But of the people who did vote in favor, who did vote against the Defense of Marriage Act, I was pleased to get their support. I think that the work that has been done by the people in the human rights campaign and the lesbian and gay organizations that have been lobbying has been very effective in turning the trend on some of these issues and educating the public as well as educating the members of the Senate. I think we have to do a lot more education. That's really what the message is of the votes from yesterday. We really need to get out there and continue that. And more of us in the community who are gay and lesbian, who are not necessarily leaders of organizations, need to be coming out of the closet.
Even Paul Wellstone, one of the most liberal Congress senators in the Senate, he voted for the Defense of Marriage Act.
Right. Well, I think it's important to understand that the Defense of Marriage Act, the issue of same-sex marriage, is a much more difficult issue for people to recognize and deal with, including and protect, perhaps particularly elected officials, politicians, than is the issue of employment non-discrimination. It's easier for people to support the concept of employment non-discrimination because everyone sort of remembers the idea of African Americans and others in our country who've had a history of being discriminated against. Marriage is a different thing. Marriage is an institution that we don't like to play with as much. But it's also important to understand that the arguments against same-sex marriage are similar to the arguments that people have used over time against African Americans, for example, in interracial marriages. And so I'm not entirely disappointed by the fact that we didn't get the supporters that we wanted to get. I think that there is a momentum from the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, which will fold over into same-sex marriage in the future.
Well, of course, we did hear Senator Phil Graham, himself a divorced member of the Senate, talking, as many of the senators who supported that the Defense of Marriage Act said, about the 5,000-year tradition of marriage as an institution. Of course, you could say that slavery as an institution had a 4,850-year tradition.
In fact,
until 150 years ago. So the question of the longevity of a tradition doesn't necessarily have anything to do with the just nature of that tradition. But isn't it true that for the gay and lesbian movement, the necessity for this act at this time, given the climate of the conditions, was not something that you sought, but it was more, or to have this debate and discussion and vote at this time, but was more foisted upon the country by those who wanted to make it an election year issue.
Oh, absolutely. This was political opportunism, pure and simple. What happened here was that the Hawaii Supreme Court in 1993 decided to send back a case to a lower court that is just now getting underway and won't be resolved until 1997 or 1998. Coincidentally, and of course there's no politics involved in this, 8 weeks before the election, the Republicans decide that they want to have a vote on same-sex marriage in the United States Senate. You can't tell me there's not politics involved with this. This is a decision that is, this is a case that's ongoing in Hawaii. It really has no impact anywhere for quite some time. And to think that it's urgent for the United States Senate to take this up right now, 8 weeks before the election, I think is really misreading the political tea leaves. What's going on here is an opportunistic attempt to exploit the same-sex marriage issue, because the conservatives understand that this is the one issue where the gay rights movement is not as well supported as other equal rights issues for gays and lesbians.
Keith, we have to break, and then we're going to come back to this discussion with the head of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, Joseph Lowery, to talk about whether gay and lesbian rights can be equated overall with civil rights. We're joined by Keith Boykin, who has a new book out called One More River to Cross, Black and Gay in America. He was working in the White House as the administration's outreach to the gay and lesbian and African American communities, and he's currently executive director of the National Black, Gay, and Lesbian Leadership Forum. You're listening to Democracy Now! We'll be back in 60 seconds. You're listening to Democracy Now!, Pacifica Radio's daily grassroots election show. I'm Amy Goodman with my co-host Juan Gonzalez. And before we move on with this discussion with Keith Boykin, author of One More River to Cross, Black and Gay in America, and Joseph Lowery, head of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, to address this issue of civil rights, we wanted to go back to the Senate floor yesterday, where Illinois Democratic Senator Carol Moseley Braun addressed the issue. She first started by saying what is in the Defense of Marriage Act, which did pass.
The word marriage means only a legal union between one man and one woman as husband and wife. And the word spouse refers only to a person of the opposite sex who is a husband or a wife. Madam President, you may want to consider that it wasn't many years ago that 16 states in our country prevented marriage between the races, interracial marriages. And in fact, in some states, it was called miscegenation. It wasn't until 1967 that the United States Supreme Court outlawed state miscegenation statutes. And when that case was argued before the Supreme Court, the Attorney General of Virginia seriously argued that the Virginia statute passed constitutional muster because both the white partner and the black partner, or the minority partner, were subject to the same criminal penalty. That kind of statutory restriction, Madam President, on people's ability to make a commitment to one another may seem unbelievable today, but it was a reality of life in this country not too many decades ago. Fortunately, our Supreme Court ultimately saw how inconsistent those that decision and these statutes were to core American principles and declared them all unconstitutional. And just as importantly, the court's decision is no longer a matter of intense controversy. Most Americans have come to understand just how unfair those state statutes were. And I would point out, Madam President, I grew up, and I would imagine that the presiding officer also grew up, at a time in our country when these statutes existed. And I had the occasion to have a relative in my family who was married to a person who was not African American, who was white, and their marriage was illegal in half the states of this country. As a child, that did not make any sense to me. How was it that a state could decide that two people could not decide to make a domestic arrangement that they wanted to make? It didn't make any sense to me then. The Supreme Court subsequently acted, and here we are faced with the exact same arguments, the very same arguments being made against domestic relations of another order. When two people decide to come together, it seems to me that it should be a matter of them, their conscience, their God, and indeed and that it is indeed inappropriate for this United States Congress to intervene in that decision making. As Dr. King stated so eloquently years ago, our Declaration was not just of Independence was not just a matter of rhetoric. It was not an exercise in hypocrisy. It was not just words to be trotted out on suitably patriotic occasions and then ignored while we all go about our lives. Dr. King knew that our Declaration was indeed a declaration of intent, and that our history has been a history of making progress, albeit in sometimes in fits and starts, but making progress toward full implementation of those American values for all of us. In our system, the Constitution protects our freedoms and prevents government from taking those freedoms away. At the same time, the genius of the system is that, at its best, it brings us together to expand opportunity and to expand freedom. Gay and lesbian Americans, however, do not yet fully enjoy the equal protection of the laws promised to every American by the 14th Amendment. And this legislation, it seems to me, is a step in the absolute opposite direction of extending the equal protection of the laws to Americans without regard.
Illinois Democratic Senator Carol Mosley Braun speaking on the floor of the Senate yesterday. She, of course, voted against the Defense of Marriage Act, although she was only one of 14 Democratic senators to do so. It was overwhelmingly supported, the act that said that men and women are the only ones who can engage in a legal marriage in this country. It was overwhelmingly supported in a vote of 85 to 14. You're listening to Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez, and we're joined, continuing our conversation with Keith Boykin, Executive Director of the National Black, Gay, and Lesbian Leadership Forum. We're joined by Joseph Lowery, who is head of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference based in Atlanta. And we wanted to address the issue of gay and lesbian rights as civil rights, something that is not accepted by everyone in this country. Keith Boykin, can you start by just making the argument, amplifying on what Carol Mosley Braun had to say?
Well, Senator Braun is exactly correct. What happens with all discrimination, it's an effort to prejudice people, to look at them differently because of something about them that we don't understand or we don't trust. We do the same thing with blacks that we do with gays. It's not to say that discrimination against blacks is the same as discrimination against gays, but there are parallels, and Senator Braun is correct to point out the parallel with interracial marriage. She refers to the 1967 case in which the Supreme Court essentially said that it doesn't make any difference what the state of Virginia says about what the definition of marriage has traditionally been. This is still a violation of the Constitution to say that two people who love each other cannot marry. We have the same sort of issue here in Hawaii and in other cities, in other country, in other states, rather, where we're dealing with the question of, is history enough? Is that enough of a reason to determine the future of our country? We can't always be guided by history. And those of us who are African American who know the history of this country with slavery and segregation know well that we can't always allow that to be the determining factor.
Well, Reverend Lowery, this is Juan Gonzalez here in New York. I'd like to ask you, some on the Senate floor argued that creating a protected class for gays and lesbians similar to other protected classes with this anti-discrimination bill would be wrong. Would this have been in the tradition of the civil rights movement?
Movement agrees wholeheartedly that every human being, every citizen, is entitled to full and unequivocal human rights and civil rights. To deny, I think the Senate yesterday was spurious on one hand and ludicrous on the other in terms of turning down, passing a bill dictating to the states about marriage, and then refusing to pass a bill that forbids discrimination based on sexual orientation. I think that's wrong. I think the civil rights community is fairly united in that position. I think it contradicts everything that this country stands for.
Reverend Larry, how did you feel about the Defense of Marriage Act, the act that defined marriage between a man and a woman, the first time that Congress has ever dared to do something like this?
Yeah, this is, I have to confess that this is a gray area for me. I have no equivocation about human rights and civil rights. In terms of the law itself, I think it was rather spurious. I don't know what what they're saying is that one state, they're not denying the states the right to permit marriage between members of the same sex, as I understand it. They're simply saying that another state does not have to recognize. In defining marriage, they've taken a new step in law in this country, and I got to study that a little more. But in terms of human rights, civil rights, employment, housing, I think we have to take a strong stand against discriminating against anybody on the basis of race, color, gender, or sexual orientation.
In terms of what's happening, these bills were considered at a time when intolerance clearly is growing in the nation. I think Keith Boykin, in your book, you mentioned a case in February of this year in Florida, in Pensacola, where a judge ordered primary custody of an 11-year-old girl to the girl's father, who was a convicted murderer, as opposed to the girl's mother, who was a law-abiding woman who happened to be a lesbian. And the judge ruled that the child would be better in a better situation with the father, who was a convicted murderer, than with the mother, who was a law-abiding lesbian. Can you talk about the climate of intolerance that is occurring in this country and why these bills come at this stage? And although I know you say that the vote was a positive indication, even though it was not successful on the anti-discrimination measure.
Well, I think you're exactly right. The case you're referring to happened with Judge Joseph Tarbuck in Pensacola, Florida, earlier this year. And I actually wasn't, unfortunately, surprised by that, because that's reflective of the climate against gays and lesbians today and has been going on for quite some time. You know, in some ways, it's hard to believe, but in some ways, gays and lesbians suffer in many ways that African Americans don't even suffer anymore. In some ways, gays and lesbians suffer merely just for being who they are and are denied basic rights just for existing, as you mentioned in that case where the lesbian was denied custody just because she's a lesbian. We see the same thing, the same sort of climate of intolerance that's being spread by the radical right and the religious right with the church burning incidents that are going on. And Dr. Lowry has talked about this a great deal and making the connections between the gay bashing and the church burnings. This is important to understand, that the same forces of evil and hatred and intolerance that are responsible for the church burnings are responsible for the gay bashing. It's the same people, in fact, sometimes, who will do the gay bashings, but the same people who will do the church burnings. So we have to really take a look at ourselves as a community and figure out ways that we can stop the intolerance and stop the violence and to come together as a community to respect each other. That starts with respecting those people who are least liked, who are most disfavored. If we can respect people who are lesbians and gays, then we can respect African Americans, and we can respect Hispanics, and we can respect women, and we can respect people with disabilities. It's all part of that same stream that we have to cross.
Reverend Lowry, one of those groups that spoke out this week in favor of the Defense of Marriage Act against gay and lesbian marriage was the Traditional Values Coalition, which is a group of ministers, a number of them African American, and they spoke at this news conference in Washington this week, saying they just cannot accept gay and lesbian marriage. What do you think, I mean, you yourself are saying you're not quite sure where you stand on the issue. What kind of conversations are going on among ministers right now around this issue?
Well, it's a very divisive issue. I don't know anything that has, even more than the abortion issue, has divided the religious community, not only in African American, but across ethnic and racial lines. The issue, I'm clear, as I said earlier, on the issue of human rights and civil rights. On the issue of the marriage itself, I favor the domestic, the city council in Atlanta just passed for the second time what they call domestic partnership. And I think to deny lesbians or gays or people who have certain ties and relationships that bring them together, to deny them the benefits of insurance and health care and that sort of thing, is a violation of their civil rights. And I support the domestic partnership thing. Where I'm having problems as the minister is out of my religious background, where my tradition may be overweighing my vision for the future, is that the act of marriage itself, domestic partnerships, covenant. Cecil Williams, who is a fellow United Methodist minister out in San Francisco, for a long time has performed what he called covenant services, where people agree to come together and live together and to be to consider themselves one in a partnership. And I have no problem with that. I guess the place that I'm still standing in the gray zone is the actual issue of marriage, which for me as a minister has been reserved for man and woman. But in terms of domestic relationship and rights and insurance and health and all these sort of things, I think that falls in the category of civil rights.
Well, Reverend, it clearly is an issue for many Americans that goes to the crux of their religious and moral beliefs, and so it is a difficult question for many, in that marriage obviously as an institution is both a religious has a religious definition as well as a civil definition. The question for me is, why is the federal government, which in many other areas is growing increasingly in the direction of less intrusion into public life, now getting into this very, very religious and personal definition into the personal lives of people? And it seems to me that the very conservatives who are pressing for less government intrusion find it very easy to justify increased government intrusion into the personal and moral lives of the American people.
I couldn't agree with that more, and I think the issue is more political than it is theological or anything else, because these same people who are fighting government intervention at every level of civil rights and human rights are arguing for government intervention, for example, in abortion. They want the sheriff and the judges to have authority in the bedroom, in a woman's reproductive system. And I think that intervention is ultimately insane and obscene. So they are inconsistent depending on their political point of view.
I agree with Dr. Lowry, but I did want to point out, though, in terms of the marriage issue, that we're not really talking about religious marriage, we're talking about civil marriage. And here we have a separation of church and state, where what the state recognizes in terms of marriage is not necessarily sanctioning what a religious institution does. Religions, including the Baptist and Methodist, could choose if they wanted not to sanction particular marriages. But the state is the issue we're talking about. The government has no right to tell a religion that it must perform a marital ceremony. But at the same time, I think the government does have a responsibility to make sure that all of its citizens are entitled to equal protection of the laws. And this is the issue that we're referring to. If I'm married to another man in the state of Hawaii, then my marriage should be recognized in Washington, D.C., or in Nevada, or in Oklahoma. And I think that is an issue that is a governmental issue, not a religious issue. And I don't think that there's any encroachment on the religious freedom by allowing same-sex marriage in the civil context.
Keith, I'd like to ask you another question. You worked in the Clinton administration. President Clinton has indicated that he will sign the Defense of Marriage Act. What do you feel about that, and what's your sense of why the president is doing this? Is it because it's a deeply felt belief on his part, or is it more because it's the political season?
Well, I think it's because it's a deeply felt belief, honestly. I worked for the president for 2 years, and I knew from the beginning that I didn't agree with him on every issue. For example, I'm deeply opposed to capital punishment, and the president favors capital punishment. I knew from the beginning that although the president supports gay and lesbian rights generally, that he's always opposed same-sex marriage. And I think you have to make some sort of concessions sometimes. You can't always get the whole loaf, so you take a half or three-quarters of a loaf. And with the president, I'm comfortable with the fact that he supports our issues, but I think that there's some education that needs to go on. I don't think that this is a capitulation to political expediency, as some people have suggested on the part of the president.
I wish I could agree with that. I think the president is a political animal. I think he might take a different perspective if it were not an election year. I think it's the same thing he's done with the welfare reform legislation.
Well, let's hope.
He called it a pig, but then he turned around and signed the pig.
Well, let us continue this discussion after the break. We're talking to Keith Boykin, who has a new book called One More River to Cross, Black and Gay in America. And we're also joined by Reverend Joseph Lowry, who is head of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. You're listening to Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. We'll be back in 60 seconds. This is Democracy Now!, the exception to the rulers. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. We're both here in New York. We're joined by Reverend Joseph Lowry, head of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. And we're joined in Washington by Keith Boykin, who is former assistant in the White House to the administration on outreach to the gay and lesbian community and African-American communities, and author of the book One More River to Cross, Black and Gay in America. And we're talking about what has transpired in the Senate over the last 24 hours. Two votes against gay men and lesbians in this country. One affirming the Defense of Marriage Act, which is an act that says that marriage takes place between a man and a woman, and that's it. And it says that while states may pass laws that allow gay marriage, that other states do not have to recognize those marriages. Yesterday also ENDA was defeated, and that was the Employment Non-Discrimination Act. It was defeated by one vote, 50-49. David Pryor, the Arkansas Democratic senator, was out. He was with his son, who was undergoing a cancer operation in Arkansas, so he was not there to cast a deciding vote. But, you know, it's unclear, even if he was there, what the administration would have done. At least yesterday on CNN, they said that the administration, in fact, did not even support ENDA, which is the Non-Discrimination Act. What is your understanding, Keith Boykin?
Well, that's not true, actually. I worked with the administration on this issue for quite some time. I know the president in his campaign in 92 stated his support of an employment bill. And during the administration, during the time when I was there, the president repeated his support for that. In fact, the Assistant Attorney General for Civil Rights, Deval Patrick, has spoken out in favor of an employment non-discrimination bill. And I'm quite sure the administration would have been there. In fact, the vice president was supposed to have been ready to fly back, I understand, to fly back from his campaigning to Washington to cast a vote if he needed
to. Well, even if the administration was for it, in fact, they did not lobby hard for it. That is clear. You do not hear President Clinton speaking out vociferously on this issue. And our understanding is on the floor, there was not a lot of administration activity around that issue.
Well, that's an issue I'm not as familiar with. I agree with you. The president has not been speaking out on this issue. And I also want to go back and agree with Dr. Lowry that the president is, of course, a political animal. And everything that happens from now until from Labor Day, essentially, until November 5th is somewhat politically motivated. But at the same time, I do think it is unprecedented to have a president who's out there at all in support of these issues. And it does take some political risk to do that. And I'm not entirely satisfied with everything, and I'm not here to be an apologist for the administration, but I do think that there is some trend of progress.
Reverend Lowry, in many of the senators made the point in the Defense of Marriage Act. Obviously, some were saying that there could be a lot of other things that the Senate could have passed that would have helped shore up marriage, because clearly the biggest problem that most marriages in America have and founder over are economic issues. What's your sense of even the title of this bill in terms of and what could have been done, in your opinion, to help shore up the institution of marriage in the country?
Well, I think we need to talk about values from an authentic perspective. Somebody said that it's not so much family values, it is valuing the family. And I think the things that are threatening families today have very little to do with the issue that's at the core of the Defense of Marriage Act. Issues like honesty and decency and economic opportunity and economic security, drugs, crime, all these issues threaten the family much more than the issue that's involved here. But the other issue is politically, it's an opportunity to gain political ground. The man who's sponsoring the same kind of thing in the House, Bob Barr, is from Georgia, and Bob Barr has enjoyed no reputation around issue. Matter of fact, he supports assault weapons, which threatens families, threatens little children out on the street, and drive-by shootings, and drug wars, and that kind of thing. And these are the issues I think that this country, well, the country needs real leadership in turn to protecting families and not the issue of sexual orientation. I don't see that as a threat to national security, not valuing the family.
I'd like to ask you, Reverend Lowry, on another topic. There have been a few more church burnings in the last few.
Yeah, one in California the other day.
Right, one in California and also one in Dallas, I think, a day or two ago. What's your sense in terms of how the administration is continuing to move on this issue? I know there have been some arrests, but somehow the burnings continue.
Well, at first, as a matter of fact, President Clinton in Greeleyville, South Carolina, he invited me to join him there at the reopening of one of the churches. Gave us credit, for good or bad, of riding herd on the administration until they had unleashed the federal resources in investigation of this thing. So I have to think that there are two fine young men, Johnson with the Treasury, and Deval Patrick, I think I got Johnson's name right, what that heads the Enforcement Division and Treasury, ATF and so forth. These two young African-American attorneys are heading the investigation. I have to believe that they're doing everything they can from their perspective. Now, part of the problem is at the local level, where they may or may not be getting the fullest kind of cooperation from local law enforcement officials in some of these areas, who have been involved with some of these hate groups from time to time. So that may be a place where they need more effective work, and more infiltration, more undercover work to get to, and directly to get the governors and others in local communities to assure the federal agencies that they have the full cooperation of local law officials. I wish there were one group in the country planning and conspiring to do this. I think it'd be easy to deal with from a law enforcement perspective. But in contradiction, I think there are a number of local people, some nuts, some hate mongers, some copycat, some drunken revelers who from time to time seize upon this, having read about it in the paper. So I think there's an assortment, a varied assortment of culprits in this thing, and that makes it very difficult. But I do think the administration at this point has unleashed the resources. Janet Reno was at our convention a few weeks ago in Detroit, and she assured us that everything must be done from that perspective.
Well, thank you very much, Reverend Lowry. Just as we're wrapping up, I'd like to ask Keith Boygan, what do you see in terms of the coming year? What will be the strategy in the gay and lesbian community in terms of moving forward on the anti-discrimination bill? And how do you see both the elections in the coming year shaping up?
Well, I think we gained a lot of momentum just in one day, or actually just this year. First with the Supreme Court's Colorado decision that happened earlier this summer. And now with the very close vote on the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, in spite of the disappointment with the Defense of Marriage Act vote, we do have momentum. We are only one vote away from passing an anti-discrimination law for gays and lesbians. And I think that the concentration in the 105th Congress has to be on passing some new legislation that will protect, finally, lesbians and gays from discrimination in employment. I think the concentration on the local level will have to be on getting more of us as gays and lesbians to come out of the closet. I think you're going to have to see more diversity in the images that we present as a community so that you'll see that there are gays and lesbians who are Black and Hispanic and of all different sorts, to start to shake up those stereotypes. And once we can do that, we can really make a profound impact, I think, on affecting public policy and getting people to support the legislation that we most need in our community.
Well, I want to thank you both very much for joining us. Keith Boykin has been our guest for this hour. Keith Boykin is currently the head of the National Black, Gay, and Lesbian Leadership Forum based in Washington, D.C., and he has a new book called One More River to Cross, Black and Gay in America. And we've also been joined by Reverend Joseph Lowry of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. You're listening to Democracy Now!
The White House looks so dark with no lights on. The president twiddles his thumbs. Meanwhile, we wait for disappointment. Here it comes. Marriage isn't for the likes of gays. And Clinton says 'twas ever thus. The GOP defends the rights of straights, never us. But even so, we found one another. Clinton's always been a friend to gays. At least that's what we used to think. Yet now he's turned around before we could even blink. When he was running back in...
Satire by Janice Lever and Chop Liver Productions on Democracy Now! Well, now we're moving into the other top story of the last 24 hours. Last night in a primetime television infomercial, billionaire H. Ross Perot, the Reform Party presidential nominee, named his vice presidential running mate.
Dr. Pat Choate is the person I have selected to be my running mate. He is a friend and trusted advisor of many years. Dr. Choate will play a central role in the campaign of ideas, solutions, and an equally central role in implementing them when we win.
Yes, the vice presidential nominee of the Reform Party is Pat Choate, a longtime friend of Perot's who's worked on his last campaign. Choate is known as a political economist and outspoken critic of the North American Free Trade Agreement and other U.S. trade policies that have led to trade deficits and loss of American jobs. Pat Choate was on Democracy Now! Earlier this year to talk about United Broadcasting, his controversial commercial radio network that planned to broadcast anti-NAFTA and populist voices like Jim Hightower from the left and Chuck Harder from the far right. Some have accused Harder of racism and anti-Semitism, but on this show, Pat Choate defended his political and economic relationship to Harder. Choate was a guest last night on CNN's Larry King Live right after the announcement of his vice presidential candidacy on the Reform Party ticket. He didn't actually speak a lot about NAFTA, but this is what Larry King had to ask him.
Let's cover a couple of periphery issues that are nevertheless issues. Are you pro-choice or pro-life?
I have Ross's position. Let the women decide.
Tobacco, should it come under control of the FDA?
I think it should come under the control of the FDA.
Do you support President Clinton's movements in Iraq?
I think that after the fact, is taking the correct actions. I think that the difficulty that we have seen in Iraq is that we have, over a series of 30 years, built up one bully boy after another. It inevitably seems to go wrong. I think we have vital interests and friends in that region that we should defend and protect them. But I think that we almost also should recognize that there are limits of what we can do inside Iraq, and that any actions that we do take, they must be explained to the American people, and we must commit the American people, not only in Iraq, but in other places around the world, before we commit our nation. The other point that I think is vital.
And that is Pat Choate speaking last night on Larry King Live. Yes, it seems that everything H. Ross Perot does revolves around the Larry King Live show. Well, right now, Juan and I are joined by Gerald Posner, who is the author of Citizen Perot, His Life and Times. We had Gerald on a couple weeks ago talking about Citizen Perot. What do you think of the new vice presidential nominee of the Reform Party?
I don't think it's a bad choice at all for Perot. You know, in terms of the mainstream press, they're all looking for a name that they immediately recognize that'll give Perot a boost overnight in the polls to 8 or 10% and, you know, start to bring him up. They want a Kemp or Gore. They're looking for what Perot's first choices probably were, more like former Senator Bourne or along that line, or Sam Nunn. Although he doesn't give Perot any bump because nobody knows him outside of a small circle of people, he's quick on his feet. He'll be good in terms of the debates if they get into the vice presidential debates. He's got very strong policies that appeal to the core constituency that Perot has been going after for a while. He won't be an easy yes man to Perot. I think he'll be very much his own person. And in the end, when people start to know him a little bit, I think he'll be a plus for Perot and add some weight to the ticket that he didn't have in 92.
Yeah, well, certainly, Gerald Posner, it couldn't be anything worse than a Stockdale was for Perot.
That's right.
I mean, because at least he is able to enunciate his ideas to some degree.
That's
on
right.
Television.
You can only go up from, I mean, you know, Stockdale, as we know now, turns out to have only been a temporary choice, but Perot, because he dropped out and then didn't come back in until October, it couldn't change Stockdale. States like California refused to let him do that, and as I report in the book, who Perot really wanted in 92 was Peter Uberoth, the multimillionaire businessman who put the Olympics together back in 84 in L.A. Two can-do businessmen on the ticket running for office in 92 was Perot's idea, but he had to stick with Stockdale, and Stockdale, of course, was a disaster in the debates and made no effect at all, if anything, hurt Perot. So I agree with you, Juan. He could only go up from Stockdale.
What about the fact that Perot doesn't seem to be able to get anyone to join him except someone who has been employed by him?
Yeah, I think that is definitely a bad sign. There's no question about it. I would have been surprised, as a matter of fact, if Perot had been able to get what I call a first-tier candidate because, you know, although Perot thinks he's going to catch fire and vie for the win in November, very, very few people believe that. I mean, in a recent CNN poll, 7% the people thought Perot had a chance to win in 96. Now, Perot may be in that 7%. That means, you know, more than 9 out of 10 Americans don't think so. They think that he'll make some symbolic run on the issues, and that'll be the end of it. So it's hard to, I mean, how do you convince somebody to give up their congressional seat or a former politician like Bourne or Rudman to run with you when their reputation is at stake? I think that was a tough task. Perot can be a persuasive person, but not persuasive enough to convince somebody of that quality to run with him. Nobody believed in the issues or the cause as much as he did to sort of throw their reputation down for the 96 election.
But yet, given the vote that he got 4 years ago, it's clear that he cannot be denied, I don't think, a spot in the debates. And that would automatically, just by him being head-to-head up against Clinton and Dole, would probably give him a bump that his campaign doesn't now have.
I agree with that completely. I mean, I happen to think that it would be wrong to deny Perot a spot in the debates this time around. I mean, he makes it more interesting. He keeps the candidates to the issues. He did get 19% last time. He's running with public funding this time, $30 million. I heard Russ Verney, the head of his campaign, say last night, you know, if the American people are paying for this campaign with $30 million of taxpayers' money, they have a right to hear Perot and what he has to say in the debate.
And we'll certainly see what happens, because that's going to be decided early next week.
Yeah,
we'll also
sure.
see if Ralph Nader's included. But we do have to wrap up. I'm sorry, Gerald Posner, author of Citizen Perot, His Life and Times. Democracy Now! Is produced by Julie Drizin, our engineer, Errol Maitlin, as well as Kenneth Mason, our director, Brother Shine. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez for another edition of Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now!